When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
I remember sitting at my dinky little like $60 Amazon desk that I had put up because I didn't have, of course, nobody had a home office, or a lot of people didn't at that point. And I was like, all right, this is it. I guess this is the call. And said, all right, you know, there's not that much to lose, I guess. Better do it. And so I called him back and said, yeah.
Because saying yes would also mean you'd basically be quitting Tesla, and then it's kind of departing into this whole new thing.
Yeah, I knew I was putting a fork, you know, in the road in my kind of life and career at that point, and had to hold my breath to do it.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech. This week we are talking, of course, about camper vans, or as they're called out in these parts, RVs, recreational vehicles. Why are we talking about RVs, you ask? Well, because lots of people have them, apparently. Apparently 1 in 10 Americans has an RV. Who knew? And the thing is, they have not really come very far technologically in decades. If you look at like a Winnebago or something, it looks not too dissimilar from what a Winnebago looked like 30 years ago. And as we all know, the electric car revolution is kind of washing through the whole auto industry, except for RVs. So this week's guest saw that it was just crying out to be electrified, and thought, maybe I should start a company. So that's what he did. His name is Ben Parker. He is a mechanical engineer who spent several years at Tesla before he left in the pandemic and teamed up with another former Teslaite to create their company called Lightship, which I have to say is a very good name. Just kind of has a nice ring to it. And they reckon that Lightship will be America's first all-electric RV company. They just raised $23 million from investors, and they are now beavering away on their first prototype, which they plan to reveal at some point next year. So I had Parker on not only to talk about Lightship, because it's just a really interesting idea with its own unique challenges, because, you know, starting a car company from scratch, or a vehicle company from scratch rather, not cheap or easy. But they've kind of bitten off this very big mouthful of an idea. But also, I wanted to have him on to talk about his experience at Tesla, which has just become this really incredible source of startup talent. It feels like virtually anyone we have on the pod these days that is in any way involved in batteries or electric cars or flying cars, whatever it may be, can be traced back at some point to Elon Musk's EV pioneer. So we also talk about just, you know, the growing Tesla tree of talent and what he learned there, what he learned to do, and perhaps what not to do. And so we get into all of that and much more. You guys are going to really enjoy this one. So without further ado, I'll hand you over to my conversation now with Ben Parker, founder of Lightship, yet another EV startup, but with a twist, obviously. Enjoy. Ben, thank you for joining the show.
Sure, Danny. It's cool to be here.
So, an electric RVing.
That's the idea.
Yeah, well, why don't we start there? How did you get involved in this? Did you grow up RVing across America? or kind of like, how did you arrive at this as a startup, as a thing that you're going to, you know, spend all your waking hours on for years to try to make happen?
Yeah, I wish that weren't true, but it's true. There's always an element of Lightship buzzing in my brain.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I did not grow up RVing. It would have been impossible for me to grow up RVing, or almost, because I grew up on an island off the East Coast, Nantucket Island.
Oh, yeah.
I think a name a lot of people know.
Yeah.
My kind of whole dad's side of the family are innkeepers, or have been innkeepers out there.
Oh, I see.
So we have a colonial style post and beam inn, which I actually spent my first probably year and a half of life living in the main suite, where mom and dad could start a property out of town, away from the inn.
Right.
But I mean, Nantucket is 30 miles off the coast of Cape Cod, or about, and it's only maybe 5 by 10 miles large, and RVing and road tripping is a kind of thing that takes a lot of space and a lot of distance between points. And yeah, you can probably count on two hands the number of RVs on the island. And you know, after school, I came out to San Francisco to work on electric cars. And here too, there are some RVs on the streets, but a lot of times it's, you know, people who own them for sort of their, I don't know if you want to call it official purpose, but for, you know, as primarily vacation vehicle and recreational vehicles, they're largely storing them outside of the city because the land is so expensive on a tiny peninsula like this.
So when you came out here to work on electric vehicles, what had you studied?
I was an engineer. Yeah, I'm an engineer. I would say kind of mechanical engineering at the core. Although a lot of my engineering work has always been on power systems, and so you inevitably tread into electrical territory. But yeah, it was a pretty general engineering degree at Dartmouth in Hanover, New Hampshire. And really a lot of the specificity that I got in my sort of in my engineering education was not so much in the classwork, but in working on formula racing cars. We had a formula student team, as many universities across North America and in Europe do.
So like Formula E or whatever kind of style?
Yeah, there have been different variations of it. Honestly, as automotive technology has sort of, you know, progressed by leaps and bounds over the last couple of decades. At the time that I was in school, what was most popular was Formula Hybrid, or that was sort of Formula E, or Formula Student Electric was just kind of on the horizon. It was brand new. We were working on hybrid electric race cars. So imagine basically taking an electric helicopter motor and like what would spin the propeller on a helicopter, combining that with a small high performance gas engine. In our case, it came out of a performance dirt bike. And, you know, smash those two together into a tiny chassis that it's only big enough for one svelte person to cram themselves down into. And that we both, over the course of 2 years, we were on a 2-year design cycle. The group of 30 of us, 30, you know, 30 university students would design and then build and test one of these cars and then take it to competition in the spring and compete against a few other dozen.
When did you come out here? What year?
It was, I started coming out to the West Coast to do internships at Tesla. I think the first one was it was basically the very start of 2015, end of 2014, start of 2015.
Right. Right. So I was going to say, yeah. So imagine it was kind of, if you came out in that time frame, there's only really one game in town to speak of in terms of electric cars.
Yeah, it was nascent. I mean, I think Tesla had just gotten to the point of, you know, real credibility in the product. There were a lot of Model S's out on the road, and when I started the Model X, the crazy SUV with the Falcon Wing flappy doors was just about to be released. So I think it's funny though, because actually my first impression and my first time I learned about Tesla was they brought the Roadster, Tesla's original, you know, low volume sports car built on a Lotus chassis.
Yeah.
Onto Top Gear, the racing show, and kind of got beat up by the Top Gear commentators Yeah, there's a whole controversy about whether or not the car broke down or was made to break down on the track that day. But that was what I knew about it. So it's funny that impression actually was still the thing that I was like, yeah, I got to try to work on this. I think there's something there.
What did you do because you got a job at Tesla. So what was your job there?
Yeah, I eventually took a full-time job as a battery design engineer. I was a mechanical design engineer working with a couple dozen other people. Mostly, in my case, I took a full-time job there mid-2016. And so the Model 3 development program was kind of just started up, and it was well underway, and yet the parts were it was all kind of nascent too.
So you were there for the full production hell of getting the Model 3 kind of line up and running, and the kind of I think that was still 2016, 2017. People were still talking about Tesla, like, is it gonna make it? Because it was so expensive and things were so delayed, and it was always like they're just blowing through cash at such an extraordinary rate. I mean, it's kind of funny to think about it now because it's the most valuable car company in the world by a very long distance. But even 5-6 years ago, I feel like there's still like people being like, I don't know if this is going to work as a business, which is just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, and I'd say 2016, and especially the winter going into spring of 2018 was crazy time there, and I think rightly so. There was a lot on the line, and it was not clear if the company was going to pull out of the Model 3 program with a great car, because there's just so much capital deployed, and the debt obligations on the company were so large at that point. But
yeah,
we were, as everybody knows, that way delayed in the ramp up of the program, and that just meant there a lot of money in the lurch. And I mean, if it had gone on without much production for another 6 months or so, I think it would have been. I mean, it was already really dire straits, and there would have been some sort of a contraction at that point. It was wild. I mean, the design engineering team we were sort of some of the first on the ground to the first Gigafactory, which is in Sparks, Nevada, just outside of Reno. And I remember it was basically a giant cavernous warehouse that was sort of empty. What it felt like when totally none of the production equipment had landed at that point. There was still a lot of construction going on the building, which actually continued through much of the production ramp. But it was basically just we started going out right at the end of 2016 and into early 2017, because we had to begin building the batteries in the production facility. I worked on sort of a core element of the battery pack called the battery module, which is that it's that first layer of connection, both mechanical and electrical, between all of the 4,416 battery cells. Those kind of like AA on steroid sized battery cells that go into the car. And so we started building those by hand with a small team of technicians.
Wow.
Right, that started 2017, and basically maybe didn't quite know it at the time, but ended up living out of hotels and suitcases in Reno for about the next 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Because again, it was just a lot of the company sort of collapsed on the Fremont facility, which is the General Assembly plant in Fremont, California, and the powertrain production facility in Reno to try to pull us through.
So you saw the Gigafactory start from literally a gigantic empty building to what it is now, which is like a marveling, kind of a, like an engineering marvel in terms of size, output, etc. So when did you decide to leave, or did you decide to leave to start a company? Like, how did you get to the point where you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to do a startup, and it's in, not only am I going to do a startup, an electric vehicle startup that is in this kind of, it's not, well, to me, it seems a niche, but I'm sure you're going to tell me it's not a niche.
I will tell you that. The funny thing, it's all relative, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to global automotive, RVing is a niche. It's at least an order of magnitude smaller, but global automotive is a $1 trillion+ business, and RVing is many tens of billions, which by many standards is huge. All of this stuff, the kind of the market side of it, you won't be surprised to hear as an engineer, I figured out a little later on.
Yeah.
My origins, or I guess the sort of the origins of how I got to RVing was, I would say by the time I left, yeah, I knew I was gonna try to start an electrification company, although I still didn't really know what it looked like, to be honest. But the nucleus of the idea started when I was still at Tesla. I had and working as a battery engineer, I had gone back to the headquarters at that point, which is in Palo Alto, California. And, you know, our team was starting work on sort of the next generation of battery design at that point. It's going into basically all the cars being built in Austin, Cybertruck included.
Right.
I believe. And, you know, that structural battery pack was sort of the day job. And then because I was home, I had a little bit more time on my hands again. And there was this thing that happened every day that just started irking me enough that I got to this point where I felt like I had to do something. And that was that a lot of our team would eat at a food truck every day, or actually kind of a rotating circuit of food trucks, all of which would, you know, they'd come to the headquarters because they knew the folks inside wanted the hot food. And they all run these really insanely loud gas generators, you know, to provide any power that they need on board to keep the cooking operation going. And they, in particular, I remember they do this at food truck fairs too. They'd go kind of like side to side with each other. And so even if the generator is spouting its stuff out of the far side of the food truck, there's another one right behind you whose generator is spewing directly into the line of people lined up.
You're like, can I have some exhaust with my tacos?
Yeah, exactly. I'd right, bring the taco down to the exhaust pipe to get some seasoning. It's gross. And so I just got to this point where I was like, okay, this is such one of those low hanging fruit electrification problems. I know that all these food trucks don't need to be running gas generators because they're not actually using that much energy every day.
Well, I just want to pause there because I think that's really interesting because it gets this whole idea of electrify everything and that we're at the kind of the start of this. And I'm just wondering from your perspective as an engineer who's just been spent years working on batteries for electric cars, what did you see in terms of like those food trucks and what the technology is now able to do that made you say, oh, that's low hanging fruit? Because for me, it's like a big noisy gas generator. That feels like
it's a lot, right?
Yeah, it feels just like viscerally, like there's a lot going on there. There's a ton of energy it's producing. And that's like, that would be very hard to reproduce in an electric kind of quiet, clean thing.
Yeah, I feel like this is the old thing with muscle cars too. Like you get a muscle car from the 1970s and the thing will blow your eardrums out. But
yeah,
but it's like a slug totally. Compared to, you know, to a modern race car. Yes. Loudness and speed are not totally equivalent.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the best parts of the Tesla DNA as well is sort of going back to the physical fundamentals. And that way of thinking was something that I certainly came to appreciate and, you know, adopt a lot more when I was there. But the interesting thing about food trucks, and I think this applies to a lot of cases of where you need onboard power, you know, sort of mobile power on a vehicle, in this case, is especially for kind of living uses, is that it's not that much energy. You actually need a lot. You need a lot more energy in a battery pack that would propel a car down the road than you need just to keep some appliances, sort of home appliances, running.
Oh, I see.
And part of the reason those generators are so loud is because they, you know, they're trying to keep costs down, and so they wouldn't put like a great muffler on it, for instance. The other thing that's interesting is that also killed me about the generators is that they're very inefficient. They're like much more inefficient at converting, you know, that propane or gas that they store in a tank to usable energy or energy that's actually being used, even versus a, you know, a passenger car, for instance. At least with a passenger car, and especially when you're cruising, a lot of the energy in the gas or more of it is going to the road. Whereas with a generator, a lot of the time, the thing is, it's basically running at like near red line, or it's running at a pretty fast clip, but the stuff that's actually drawing energy off of it is barely drawing anything. Like it might be an iPad that you're charging or something like that.
Right.
You've got this roaring engine, which is basically just, it's like a heat generator at that point. It's just, let's just burn gas and spew the heat to the atmosphere.
It's like using a fire hose to like water your lawn.
Yeah, total overkill. And so looking at a battery-based system or a battery and solar system where you can really meter the energy to the loads, to the appliances, whether it's an iPad or a refrigerator or whatever it is on board the vehicle, you only use the energy that you actually have and that you actually need, and, you know, make no carbon dioxide and CO2 and noise and all that stuff in the process. stuff I didn't, you know, I didn't think about with food trucking was just, of course, I've now learned to do is one, you know, look at sort of willingness and ability to pay, and two is just market size, right? And they're, you know, where they're only, I think it's about 10,000 food trucks in the whole U.S. and they're very concentrated in just a few kind of urban areas. RVing is many orders of magnitude bigger. It's over 10 million active RVs on the road. Believe it or not, one in 10 American families has an RV sitting in their driveway or in storage somewhere.
One in 10?
Yeah.
Wow.
10% of the country. So I kind of looked at that and I was like, oh man, this is how I ultimately stumbled into RVing was, first off, people, and especially people with more entrepreneurial backgrounds than I had, would bring up RVing in conversation. And then in terms of adapting this pet project to electrify food trucks to more of a business that I would try to scale, the problem set or the problem space was really similar.
Right.
So it's kind of a natural progression.
So you quit Tesla when?
I left in April 2020. There was something afoot in the world. you might remember.
Right. Yeah. Yes, of course. And I presume you got Tesla stock, you were able to kind of like not immediately jump to another job and start tinkering around with these ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think I knew that I knew that I had a bit of time, right? That I could last long enough to work on something like this. But I was pretty sure that I was gonna, you know, before I finally took the step to leave, I was like, yes, I don't know exactly what this is gonna look like. And in fact, while we are now the first American all electric RV manufacturing business, that was not even exactly the idea that I was kind of setting out to explore in April 2020. But I knew there was something there. I was like, okay, I love road trips. I love the outdoors personally. I see that there is this big market out here by the numbers. Pretty clearly, it's a, you know, it's an area where, because remember, I was coming off of trying to sort of sell units to food truckers where there's maybe not always a lot of cash in the bank because a lot of them are smaller businesses. I was kind of drawing the comparison to the RVing lifestyle where, you know, this is really kind of it's an essential part of Americana. It's a luxury way to experience the outdoors and sort of all the splendor there in comfort or in a way that's sort of more accessible to a lot more people. And so I, just looking at the numbers, I was like, okay, I think there will be a willingness to pay for, you know, a vastly improved experience here. And I was quite confident from, you know, everything that I'd done and learned to date that, electrification could make a big dent in radically improving the experience of you know, RV travel and camping. But I was pretty aware then, and I still am now, that I had a lot to learn about the lifestyle and about the industry and ultimately the people, because I was already sure at the time I didn't know enough RVers. And so, I mean, COVID started and, you know, we were all shut up in our apartments in San Francisco. And I was like, I can't do another 3 months of this. I got to get out. I've got a nomadic spirit. So I called up this RV rental business, family RV rental business in Antioch, California, like I think maybe the week after the shutdown orders went into place. And when I called them, they were like, and I told them I wanted to rent an RV, and maybe for a while, actually, they were like, we're so glad you called. Our phone literally has not rung in like a week.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Cause everyone was
just locked down
in reassessment mode. They were like, you know, nobody knew what to do at that point. It was kind of shell shock. So then I, you know, we sort of haggled back and forth, and I got what ended up being a very good rate on the RV for that summer. Cause I was talking, you know, like a 2.5-3 month rental with them, and they agreed. I said, could you hold it for a few days? I got to, you know, get my affairs in order here. And they're like, okay, sure. Cause I knew I was going to be, you know, probably leaving my job to do this too. And they called me back after a day or two, and they were like, Ben, things have changed. Our phone is now off the hook.
Oh, wow.
There's, you know, way too many people calling us right now. So they're like, we need you to commit. And I said, all right, just you give me an hour here or two. Of course, they kind of didn't know what was at least at stake in my mind. And I thought about it, and I remember sitting at my dinky little like $60 Amazon desk that I had put up because I didn't have, of course, nobody had a home office, or a lot of people didn't at that point. And I was like, all right, this is it. I guess this is the call. And said, all right, you know, there's not that much to lose, I guess. Better do it. And so I called him back and said, yeah.
Because saying yes would also mean you'd basically be quitting Tesla, and then it's kind of departing into this whole new thing.
Yeah, I knew I was putting a fork, you know, in the road in my kind of life and career at that point, and had to hold my breath to do it, but went for it. And the trip was awesome because this is something that I just love about, you know, working in RVs, period, is that it's pretty, as you'd expect, it's pretty relaxed atmosphere. It's kind of all about vacationing and recreation and you know, having fun, enjoying time with your friends and family and all the beautiful natural settings. So I got out there and I was traveling solo a lot of the time, and, you know, was living out of this, I had a Winnebago motorhome. So sort of combined living space and driving area.
Yeah.
Had a powertrain, all that. And basically took it for the next 3 months. And I still have a blog up if anyone digs deep in the bowels of Medium.
Right.
You'll find my Lightship RV blog. Got a route mapped out there still, I think, and did about 6,000 miles. And I stayed. It was kind of cool. I got a bunch of different varieties of RV camping in then too, because there are many, many different ways to do it, from really kind of established RV parks, a lot of the time that you find even in the suburbs, for instance, to state and national parks, to total off the grid dry camping, like even on Bureau of Land Management land, which is, you're basically fending for yourself.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So you came back, and then you're like, all right, now I'm going to start a company. Like, how does...
Now what? Well, technically, I'd incorporated from the road. I used a service that Stripe has set up called Atlas.
Oh, yeah. We've had Patrick Collison on this pod, and he told us about Atlas.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks, Patrick. I don't know you, yeah, but yeah. he helped me set up a Delaware C Corp. Yeah, incorporated from the road at one point. It's pretty funny. My laptop screen was broken that whole summer, and all the Microsoft stores were closed. And so I had to, like, jury rig it up to the TV,
right,
in the
RV,
but just barely got it to work and did the incorporation. So I kind of had a name and an address at that point. And I'd been sketching ideas for what the first product would be, for kind of just napkin sketching through that whole summer. And so I had an idea of what I wanted to first build, which at the time was just the power system. I was thinking about, it was kind of piggybacking off of the original generator idea. Had this idea for a power system. So, you know, batteries that would integrate with solar and could run AC appliances in an RV. So I set to work on, you know, I'm a sort of a product designer at before. And so I thought, what could I do to get this started? I should start building something.
Yeah.
And I had this idea and, you know, put aside some cash to do it. And I spent the next maybe 6 or 7 months from the time that I got back at the end of that summer of 2020, designing and then building a first version of the power system, which is this, you know, big few hundred pound box that you could put into an RV compartment, and got a bunch of help from friends who I already knew, kind of finally assembling it or putting it together. I set an arbitrary deadline for myself, which was had to go cook waffles, electric waffles on Marina Green at the very, you know, north side of San Francisco with the bridge, Golden Gate Bridge in view, and pulled a couple of all-nighters, thankfully I've not had to do since, to get this thing done by the date that I had, you know, invited all my friends.
Did you have your waffles?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Those waffles, I come hell or high water, we were gonna cook those waffles.
Right.
And we did, with the champagne to boot.
Right.
So basically I built one of those and started going out and trying to sell that product to begin with. And
which would be like a power system that you would basically replace a gas generator in an RV, basically.
A retrofit product.
Gotcha. Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, I was going out. It was kind of interesting. I was back to the roots. I was trying to sell to both food truckers and sort of RV distributors at that point. And after a couple months, I was getting some sales commitments out of it, but I could also tell that I was building a business that would supply into the RV industry, and that it was not the sexiest product. It was going to be a really hard way to scale into the industry. And my goal from the start was how do we help RVing transition to be an all electric activity as fast as possible? Because I don't think it's happening fast enough or in the right way necessarily. And I hit a point, and it was luckily about a month before I met my co-founder, Toby Kraus, who is kind of he's like the yin to my yang, where my background is product and engineering. His is sort of commercial and finance. He was a finance leader he led finance at Tesla for a few years.
Oh, wow.
Actually before I even got there. And he was a finance leader at Proterra as well, which is a battery electric bus company. It's interesting. He sort of started and led a sub business within Proterra called Proterra Powered, which is them, you know, selling their core technology, especially batteries, to other, you know, big truck manufacturers. I was really lucky to meet him. Actually got introduced through our technical advisor, who is also a Tesla alum and,
wow.
and now a startup founder as well, and was our very first investor. He was the first.
Who's that?
His name is Dorian West. Great engineering leader. He was at Tesla basically since the beginning and for about 15 years. And he did a lot of work building the battery engineering team from its inception there, and led the semi-truck engineering effort for a couple of years as well, which is great. It's very relevant to us because it's a big EV pulling a trailer at sort of at the core. And Dorian, yeah, he put Toby, or he mentioned Toby to me as I was sort of showing him the very first pitch deck, the pre-seed pitch deck. And I looked up Toby, and Toby was an entrepreneur in residence at a venture firm at the time. So he was, you know, at that point really was looking to start a company as well, and just looking for the right fit. And he saw it. Well, actually it took several weeks of me twisting his arm, but ultimately, you know, Toby has worked on electrification in passenger cars, sort of from the end of the Roadster and the whole Model S program. And he then worked on big electric vehicles, you know, these transit buses. And so it was kind of the perfect mix to, you know, to have a consumer electric vehicle that was also very, very large. And he sort of loved the market, saw in particular that, you know, a key thing to know about the RV market that it's not apparent at first blush, or if you don't know the activity in the market as well, is that RVing is mostly a travel trailer market. It's mostly a towable market. So there's big self-propelled motorhomes, and this includes Sprinter vans and smaller vehicles. They are a diminishing fraction, or a very small fraction of the overall market. They're about 10% of the market, whereas...
So 90% are towed, basically.
Yep. Yeah. It's, you know, close to 600,000 RVs produced every year in the US, actually a bit over that last year. And over 500,000 of them are towable. So they're all, think of like an Airstream,
gotcha,
for instance, a towable caravan. This was sort of the part of the nut of the product idea, is that you can do much like what Tesla has done, sort of start from scratch, say, in their case, it was what should a car be for in the electric age. In our case, it is what should a recreational vehicle, most of which are trailers, be in the electric age, and sort of design for efficiency in every part of the vehicle. So design for aerodynamics, for low drag, things like that. And once you make a vehicle that is, even without propulsion, efficient enough, now you can put a battery and even, you know, a motor on board the RV, and you have enough energy to, of course, run all of the appliances on board, because like we said, you don't need that much energy to run those anyway, but even to use the energy in sort of a passenger car sized battery pack to propel that RV, to propel that trailer down the road. And to reduce all of the load on the tow vehicle, you know, which is usually a truck or an SUV, so that it experiences a range loss zero.
Zero range loss.
Yeah. You can basically make the trailer compensate for its own drag, right? So if the trailer provides all of the energy that it alone would need to go down the road, now the tow vehicle...
Oh, I see. So it's a towable, but it has a motor in it that can kind of help it along.
Yeah, the tow vehicle, in a way, almost becomes like a guide vehicle, right? It's not really pulling very much anymore.
Because as I've also seen, on your website, it's kind of like, I don't know what the best way to describe it. It's almost like it's got like a sharp nose and a kind of a curved back. So it almost looks like a, it's not quite an arrow in the front, but it's...
Like a torpedo, kind of.
Yeah, kind of a torpedo, yeah.
Like a cigar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you gotta make something that fundamentally is really good at cutting through the air. You can't pull a wall anymore, which is what a lot of travel trailers or traditional travel trailers are like. It's like pulling a brick wall behind you. You have to pull a torpedo instead. And when you do that, now your vehicle is efficient enough that you can give it a little push, a little extra push, and without spending too much money on the product to get it there. And this is especially critical for think we're kind of at the dawn of the electric truck right now. So think of the Rivian R1T and the Ford F-150 Lightning, the Cybertruck, there's an EV Silverado on the horizon too. Passenger trucks are going electric at this point, sort of that half-ton truck in particular. This is by far the best-selling vehicle class in America.
I know. I feel like the electrification of trucks, and presuming people like it and it kind of performs as people saying it will, that to me feels like a tipping point, because it's... Americans love their trucks.
Totally. I mean, there's like a million F-150s sold every year in the U.S. It's for decades now. It's crazy popular.
Yeah, and they have crappy gas mileage, and they're just, you know, there's these big hulking things. But if you can electrify it in a way that makes sense and doesn't, and actually performs better in many ways, I feel like that's going to be a real game changer for the industry.
And for EV trucks, they're, you know, all these EV trucks that are coming out, their Achilles heel is towing. And in particular, it's, you know, long range towing. They don't do it well. They pull like a beast, but they can't do it far enough. Everything else about the product is way better than, you know, sort of the outgoing combustion technology, but they can't tow up far enough. So that's kind of, of course, towing is a key use case for these vehicles. You need to be able to tow. And towing an RV in particular is sort of one of the most popular ways to tow. To give you an example, you know, most EV trucks have about a 300-mile unladen range right now, but if you put a traditional travel trailer behind it, you lose about two-thirds of that range, you know, as you're cruising down the interstate.
You lose two-thirds?
Yeah, so think of like less than 100 miles of range is where you end up.
So basically, you render that use, it's unusable, effectively.
It's totally infeasible to do a long-distance RV road trip if you are pulling a traditional travel trailer behind an EV truck today. Toby and I have experienced this firsthand. You know, we got a long-range Model X SUV and travel trailer to the back of it, and I think I charged for something between 40 and 50 hours, like every single fast charger between the Bay Area and Boulder, Colorado, where half of our company is and where he lives, just to make it. It's like, you can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, our thinking is that RVing is not going to stop. RVing is sort of a classic pastime for a lot of people. It's like quintessential thing. Trucks are going electric. Every major OEM is, all these automakers are putting huge commitments behind electrification of their whole fleet, trucks included. So somebody's got to make the ends meet here. And this was sort of one of the core reasons, especially from a sort of like a timing standpoint, that it clicked in my brain and then clicked in Toby's too, and now many of us, that there needs to be an electric RV manufacturer. There needs to be a company that is sort of taking advantage of, you know, the opportunities of electrification and also responding to the constraints, the new constraints here. And I didn't see it happening fast enough, and I did not want the growth of, you know, the electric truck movement to slow down at all. And so I was like, all right.
Right.
Got to do something about it.
How was the process of raising money?
You know, actually, I think certainly having the two of us as a pair, Toby and I, helped a lot, because there's this idea of how well do the founders with their experience fit the market that they're going after. And I think investors really loved that, you know, we have complementary skills and experience, even personalities that I, Toby has a funny saying that I'm kind of the sizzle and he's the steak. there's a nice pairing there. Right. And yeah, Toby had some fundraising background already because he'd done a lot of that at Proterra. And I mean, from the time that I first met Andrew Beebe, who we both know, at Obvious Ventures, like Toby and he had talked a little bit. This was back last summer and last spring, last summer. Toby had sort of told him about the idea, and Andrew was like, "Oh, this is really cool." And then Andrew and I met in the morning in San Francisco for breakfast, and then we met again that afternoon, and then we pitched, you know, the whole partnership. I think it was a day or two later.
Oh wow!
In person, and then we were set. It was happening by like that evening, the same day of the pitch, that sort of thing. One thing that I am confident is true is that, you know, we're going to be judged more and more on how well we're executing, how good is the product actually, how well does it meet, you know, people's needs in this market. And of course, with a vehicle manufacturing business, the amount of capital that you need to raise keeps it grows.
For sure. You're at the very thin end of the wedge right now.
Yeah, exactly. We're sort of in this nice stage where, you know, we're doing product development and you don't have to spend too much capital to find something that works. And then the scale up of the business and the manufacturing ramp in particular is going to be, it's going to be a huge, huge challenge. But I think folks have already shown the sort of the beginnings of the product too, which we're really excited to share with the world next spring, are like in love with it. And really, it kind of comes down to, you know, what's been the most fun part of the whole experience for me so far, and I'm sure for Toby too, is just kind of building this awesome team. Really, I'm humbled every day to work with the couple dozen people we've pulled in so far. And I think it kind of feels like the setup is there. And if we keep executing and wow the world and are backing up the excitement of this product and sort of the good timing with a deftly engineered product that is, you know, built to last and sort of stand the test of time, then I think we're going to do great. And I think we'll be able to keep raising money, you know, without that much of a problem.
Right. Two more questions and I'll let you go. One is, I think I mentioned to you last time we spoke, especially the more we kind of get into the world of climate tech, which is kind of growing and growing out here, the more people I come across who at some point or other in their career came from Tesla. There's like this whole Tesla tree of people who are there and have left and now started their own companies, battery companies, car companies, whatever it may be. And I'm just wondering, from that experience, is there anything that you took from it that you're either like, learn to do or not to do, or things to be careful of as you've kind of embarking on your own thing? Because it, you know, Tesla, I mean, I think for a solid decade every year was like, is this year Tesla's gonna go bust, kind of like we spoke about before.
There's always a diving save in the works with
that. Exactly. So it's a very kind of harrowing business story that Tesla is still here, but I'm just wondering, from your kind of vantage point, is there things that you took away from that where you're like, I definitely want to do that, I definitely don't want to do that, or I want to, you know, the kind of the good and bad of that and kind of what you drew from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I would say is that, yeah, I agree with you. There's the Tesla network has sort of spread far and wide at this point. And honestly, it might be one of the greatest impacts that the company has over time, is this fanning out of people who are really passionate about electrification and making a more sustainable economy and are really doers,
yeah,
like who are committed to making stuff happen. And it was pretty amazing, actually. Toby and I we'd never met before we started working together, and then, you know, shook hands to co-found the company. But in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like we'd known each other for like years. And I think much of that is because there's just something so visceral in the shared experience of having done some of that work at Tesla, you know, in the origins of the EV industry, and just a lot of shared experience there. And we were both pretty passionate about making, maybe taking the idea of sustainability back to the workplace too, and you know, to a startup as well, where there's kind of the idea that's come into being of the startup grind and sort of, you know, working endlessly to build a great company. And the two of us and everybody at Lightshipper knew we're not afraid of hard work, but I think part of our experience is like Toby left Tesla to go get married. He found it challenging to do those two things at once, where that was kind of part of the sequence there.
Totally.
And I think, you know, coming into a recreation environment as well, where it was going to be about vacation and relaxing and all of this, we thought that there was a different ethos that we could build there. And yeah, take this idea of sustainability and sort of make for a sustainable work practice as well. So I think that's one thing that's maybe unique or is different about what we're doing here.
Yeah, because it feels like Tesla is just a, feels like it's a very intense, demanding place.
It's hard. And I think there's some truth to it. Like, there's a shot clock right now. We're emitting a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere, and the actions that we can take right now to slow down and ultimately sort of set the ceiling, and hopefully it's a low ceiling on how much CO2 humanity emits, will translate pretty directly to how far climate change progresses. So I get it. But I think at the same time, we were sort of like, okay, there's going to be a balanced nature to this business. It's built into the ethos of the activity and the industry as it is. And so we want to make sure that this is a place where people can do the best work of their lives, work on electrification, really expand the movement in a new direction, and bring awesome electric products to people who, like, I think the Lightship might be the first electric product that a lot of our customers ever own. And that's really exciting for me, because it's our chance to show how great a well-designed electric product can be. But I think, yeah, we wanted to sort of temper the day-to-day intensity and pressure, you know, to fit what we're doing better.
So avoid burnout, in other words, or burning out your employees, or...
I think that's part of it. I think it's a little soft, but just for us to be able to look back and say that we're all, you know, we kind of felt fulfilled the whole way too.
Right.
So I would draw that distinction. But I think a lot of the idea around excellence and us, again, being the ones to do the work to make sure that we put electrification's best foot forward now in this new industry, that's straight from Tesla. It's sort of the mentality. I mean, building hardware this big and complicated is so laborious. There's so many little details that have to go right. And so to not feel like we've done ourselves proud, you know, made a product that we can all be proud of, that would feel like a waste of a lot of time and effort, because it's something like what we're doing. Even to get the first product out to market is a years long endeavor.
Totally. And as you say, it's here at the beginning of this very long, very expensive project. So if you're going to do it, you might as well knock it out of the park if you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Last question, and I'll let you go. This is the most important question of the interview.
Okay, go.
Do you know why all camper vans or campers or RVs or whatever are all beige? You mentioned earlier. Why are they beige or white? Why is that the color palette for the whole industry? Have you looked into this?
Yeah, I could. there's a lot of funny directions to go there. I could speculate. Well, first off, RVs are very costed down products. There's been a lot of cost taken out of them over time.
Because the basic thing is so expensive to put together, because there's so much stuff.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's also just that the products have not changed fundamentally that much over the last few decades. And so, you know, when there's not a ton of sort of revolution happening or you could say maybe innovation happening in the products over time, then cost pressures that's the driver.
Yep.
So maybe it's just that they don't want to spend extra money on the on the paint coat, which I'm joking a little bit on. I think another real thing is that you have to do really good thermal engineering if you're building a darker vehicle. Of course, there are a lot of cars out there that are jet black. I mean, it's maybe the standard color for a lot of cars, but yeah, you need to make sure that you're not gonna overheat the interior of the vehicle. And again, I mean, a key thing is that you, unless maybe you have a built-in generator or you're carrying one along in your truck, if you're not camping at a campsite that has a power plug right next to it, and if it does, it might not be in a place that you actually want to camp. If you're not doing that, you probably can't run your air conditioner. For instance, you might have a little 12 volt fan, like a low power fan that can pull some air through. But if you don't have the power on board, which pretty much all RVs don't today, to climate condition the space, then you got it. You got to do things like, you know, make it as bland and white as it can be to keep the interior cool enough. Yeah, I think maybe there's some stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, we've sort of focused a lot on building great design into the DNA of Lightship as well, because I think that's part of what can make something iconic and can make us really unique and memorable, and to have a product that people really want to showcase sort of front and center in their lives. And we may not be building a beige.
Oh.
Beige RV. Not to give away too much.
No. Not a big reveal. Mini reveal. Well, I look forward to checking it out and following along as you guys go.
Thanks, Danny.
It's a fun idea. And I think, like I said, I do think that the EV moment for pickup trucks in America is going to be a very big thing as these trucks start to come out over the next... I mean, the Rivian is already out, but, you know, as the kind of F-150 and these others come out, I feel like if they can start really replacing you know, the most popular car in America, that's a very big deal.
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, if, like you said, best selling vehicle in America for like four decades running, if that becomes majority electric, and I think Ford has already capacitized that program for a couple hundred thousand trucks per year over the next couple of years, like that's watershed. That is a huge moment for electrification. And yeah, we just want to make sure that as you know, as people want to use and enjoy their truck, they've got an awesome camper to pull behind that they can actually go somewhere with.
Not just keep it in their driveway. Well, I wish you luck, and we'll definitely have you back on as things kind of progress.
All right, let's do it. Lots more to come.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Ben for taking the time. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank producer Daisy for making it happen, as ever, each week. And I think I'm going to be kind of returning to this Tesla idea, the Tesla talent tree idea. I think it's a fun one. So I'll probably be trying to write something in the paper in the next week or two on that. So do keep an eye out. And yeah, thank you for the ratings, the reviews, telling for your friends and neighbors about the podcast. It always helps. And that is it for me this week. You can find me at thetimes.co.uk. You can find me on the Twitters at Danny Fortson, or you can email me, danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. Be well, and talk to you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.